السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم. کنٹینیوئنگ ود دا بایوگرافی آف سیدنا عمر رضی اللہ عنہ. سو وین سیدنا عمر رضی اللہ عنہ کوریہ شداد بن اوس بن ثابت ہو از دا نیفیو آف حسان بن ثابت الانصاری رضی اللہ عنہ. When he reached Umar Ranon, he replied to it as follows: I too praise Allah the Almighty. I advise you to remain fearful of Allah Ta'ala. This fearfulness earns the pleasure of your Rabb, provides a rizq for the soul, and is the treasure of wise men when they become weak spiritually. I received your letter in which you mentioned that you will advise me. You said that I must understand my position. How do you know that I do or do not know that already? You think too well of me. You reminded me that I have been entrusted with the entire ummah, that I will have in my audience enemies and friends, noble and ignoble, strong and weak, and that each of them has a right to justice. You ask me how well do I perform therein. There is indeed no power, no might, except with Allah Ta'ala. You also told me to be fearful of the day which will finally come with the passage of day and night. The passage of time makes everything old, makes things once in the distant future close to the present, and makes the promised events come to pass. Until the passage of day and night will bring the day of Qiyamah. Something that you think is far away. You ask a student of Deen when he first starts studying. He say, when I'm going to finish? And then next thing he knows, yeah, I'm on the finish line. Person starts Alim course. When is going to finish? A lady, she conceives. You know, when is this child going to be born? Next thing the child is born to, and the child too is getting married. So the passage of day and night brings distant things close. One day it will bring Qiyamah also. We think Qiyamah is far, but Qiyamah too will come away. On that day, meaning Qiyamah day, all the secrets will be examined. Everything will be laid bare, and people's faces will submit to the majesty of the King whose might will subdue them. Everyone will be humbled and feel meek in front of him, waiting for his judgment and hoping for his mercy. You also mentioned that you have heard that there will be people in this ummah who will apparently be like brothers, but secretly they will bear enmity towards each other. But this will not happen now. It is something that will occur near the end of times, when people will have hopes and fears pinned on people, instead of attaching these feelings with Allah Ta'ala. They will have hopes in people instead of having hopes in Allah Ta'ala. Allah the Almighty has made me in charge of your affairs. I ask Him to help and protect me in this matter, just as He protected me in other matters. I am a Muslim man and a weak slave of Allah Ta'ala. Imagine how he's talking, so much humility. And we think Umar Ranon now, you know, he was Jalal, you know. I mean, read his letter now, see how much of humbleness. This authority, however, will not change anything in my manners and my character, if Allah wills. Inshallah, it won't change me. I won't become a proud person now. Greatness is only for Allah Ta'ala. And the slaves of Allah have no share in greatness. None of them should say that Umar has changed since becoming the Khalif. I know what is correct myself and act accordingly, explaining my actions to you. Whoever has a need or has been wronged in any way will have justice, and I will not show leniency to any Muslim who has wronged another. Your welfare is dear to me, and your hardship and decline distresses me. I will be held accountable for what I have been entrusted with and the position I hold. I know what will harm me spiritually. If Allah wills, I will not leave myself at the mercy of anyone, not shaitan, nor evil thoughts. Beyond this, I cannot do anything except with the help of trustworthy people amongst you who are sincere to the Muslim Ummah. I will never entrust anyone with the authority I have been charged with except to such men, meaning people who got the goodness of the Ummah at heart. If only we had leaders like that today. Today leaders don't have the goodness of the Ummah at heart. They got their own goodness at heart. As for the authority and leadership in this world, then all of it will one day end. It will go away. Today you're a leader, tomorrow you're not a leader. We are all brothers. Whoever of us leads another or is appointed with authority over him will not be harmed in any religious or worldly sense. On the contrary, the one who is given authority may be more likely to go through trials and more likely to make mistakes. We are all brothers. Whoever is made the leader, it won't harm us. Because everybody has to follow Allah's law. It's not like in the dunya. In the dunya, you worry about which party is going to come into power. Because which party can party more than the other party? Because they usurp all the monies and have one big party. Isn't? So you worry now. If this party comes in, what would now? They are communist people now. Maybe they'll close the masjids, they'll do this, they'll do that. That party comes in, they're too liberal. Now they'll allow LGBT and discos and casinos and all haram gambling and everything. That party, if they come in, oh, these people, they are, what you call them? The old government? Apartheid people. Now they will make zulam on people of a certain color and give all the good things of the country to people of another color. So you worry. But in Islam, whoever becomes the leader is not a problem. Because whoever is the leader, he still has to follow Allah's law. He still has to follow Allah Ta'ala's law. Whoever is the leader. So you don't have to worry who's the leader. Yeah, the leader has to worry. The leader is the one who has to be worried. Because he is now in a position, just now he's going to wrong somebody, make a wrong decision, do stuff. So he is the one who has to be more worried than the people. So only those whom Allah Ta'ala protects, those leaders whom Allah protects, they will be safe. And there's very few like that. So that is the end of the letter, right? Now we come now to the conquest of Dimashq, Damascus. Right? Conquest in the Levant, meaning Sham, represent the second phase of the invasions in this direction. The first phase took place in the Khilafat of Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. After defeating the Romans at Yarmouk in a decisive manner, Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah radiallahu anhu appointed Bashir bin Ka'ab al-Humayri as the governor in Yarmouk. Soon he received news that the remnants of the Byzantine army who were defeated at Yarmouk now, those who were still left, they were gathering at a place called Fihl. They were gathering there. He was also told that Damascus had received reinforcements from Homs. Right? So Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu could not decide now whether he must attack Damascus first or he must go for Fihl first. Which place he must go? So you see, what best thing to do? Ask the seniors for advice. So he wrote to Umar radiallahu anhu to seek advice on this matter. Umar radiallahu anhu replied, start with Damascus. But prepare well for it. Prepare well for it. Because Damascus is the fortress of Sham. And it is the seat of their kingdom. keep the enemy combatants gathered at Fihl, Homs, and Palestine busy with a cavalry detachment. Keep them busy. Send some cavalries to go fight against them. Stay far from them, but just keep them busy. So they can't come to help you in Damascus now. Right? If Allah Ta'ala makes you victorious at Fihl before Damascus, then that would be wonderful. That if your cavalries go there and Allah Pak gives them victory, then Alhamdulillah. But you focus on Damascus. If victory in Damascus comes earlier, then place someone in charge of the city of Damascus, and you and all the other commanders should leave Damascus and go and attack Fihl. If you conquer it, you and Khalid, meaning Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anh, should proceed to Homs to force the enemy to leave this country now. Because Homs will be the last now stronghold of theirs, force them to leave. So based on these instructions, Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anh sent platoons to Fihl. These were commanded by Abul A'war Sulami, Amir bin Hasma, Amr bin Kulayb, Abd bin Yazid bin Amir, Ammara bin Sa'iq, Wasfi bin Ulayya bin Shamil, Amr bin Habib bin Umar, Lubda bin Amir, Bashir bin Ismah. So these are the names of the different commanders, right, who were placed in leadership positions. The overall command was entrusted to Ammara bin Makhshin, right? Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu himself marched towards Damascus, and he didn't meet any significant resistance on the way. Right? It was a clear road to Damascus. Even though the Romans had pinned their hopes on the people of the cities that lay between the Muslims and Damascus, the kuffar who were in Damascus, they thought now that as the Muslims are passing all the towns leading to Damascus, the people of those towns will put up a fight against the Muslims. But that didn't happen. Right? Abu Ubaidah just marched through, none of those towns put up any resistance. However, these people neither had, so they never had the motivation nor the desperation to fight off a large army. Right? Also, you see, the Byzantines had treated the people of the smaller villages very unfairly. So they never have no loyalty towards the Byzantine regime. So they say, why must we give, now put our life at risk for them? They must defend themselves. So the Muslims reached the Ghouta suburb of Damascus. So in this place, there were palaces of the Byzantine Empire and villas, huge villas. But they're all empty. Nobody is in there. All the people went away into Damascus. They abandoned their palaces, they abandoned all their huge villas, and they went away into Damascus itself. Now, Hiraqal sent a force of 500 soldiers from Homs as backup to boost the defense at Damascus. Now it was a very small force compared to what was required. You know, before this, when they were sending, they sent 200,000, 100,000. Now he's sending 500. However, this reinforcement was intercepted north of Damascus, and a violent battle ensued in which the Byzantines were beaten. The Muslims were victorious. The inhabitants of the city wrote to Heraclius, the inhabitants now of Damascus, they're writing to Heraclius, asking him to save them. He wrote back telling them that, see, remain firm. Remain firm, and he's telling them, you all must fight. And he's giving them encouragement to fight, and he said that, I will send you all help. I'll send help to you all. So this boosted their morale and persuaded them to resist the siege and the invasion. Right. But they're waiting for help now. They think Heracles is going to send now reinforcements for them. So the Roman army, the commander-in-chief was Heraclius, right? Heracles. Governor was Nestas. Right? Commander of forces was Verdian. His title was Bahan. He had fought at Yarmouk and he fled. Right? The Roman army in Damascus numbered 60,000 soldiers with expected reinforcements from Homs. Right? They were waiting now, reinforcements will come. Of these, 20,000 were dedicated for defense and 40,000 for offensive combat. They chose Damascus due to its built-up defenses, walls, fortresses. Their hopes for reinforcements propelled them to resist. The Roman army in Fehl consisted of the garrison already present there and the remnants of Yarmouk. Right? Those who managed to run from Yarmouk with their lives, they went to be there. The battle at Yarmouk had dashed their morale and instilled fear in their hearts. Right? That a small army came and slaughtered our comrades. What chance do we stand against them? So they were very down. You know, their morale was very low. So come to the Muslim army now. The Muslim army commander-in-chief was Umar bin Khattab, radiallahu anh. The commander of operations now on the ground was Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah, radiallahu anh. Abu Ubaidah sent 10 of his lieutenants with Abu'l-Awar as the vanguard with a reasonable force. But there's no reports of exactly how many. Right? But he sent them to gain control over the area from the Damascus Road all the way to Baysan, right? Which is a well-known place on the ruins of Fihr. Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu dispatched forces under the command of Alqama bin Hakim and Masruq to different places in the direction of Palestine. This was to secure movement along the south-west axis. Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu stationed a detachment under the command of Zil Qila, north of Damascus, on the road connecting the city to Homs. This was done with the dual purpose of guarding that direction from the besieged army and also to prevent Roman reinforcements from reaching Damascus. Right? See how intelligent they were, how they set themselves out. After the Battle of Yarmouk, the strength of the Muslim army stood at around 40,000. This was a well-structured and disciplined force marked by high morale following the convincing victory at Yarmouk. The size of the force which laid siege to Damascus was around 20,000. The rest were sent to Fihl to guard that direction. This was a cavalry regiment which could be withdrawn as reinforcement to the besieging army. They were on horseback, so they can move fast. So if they are needed, they can come this side. If they are needed that side, they can go that side. So we'll stop there for today. Inshallah, we'll continue. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك نشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت نستغفرك ونتوب إليك السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته